Lesson 72. So holding grievances is an attack on God's plan for salvation. It's on page 124.
In the back, back mirror in the back.
It's the middle. This is an extraordinarily deep section. Sometimes I just have to go into it, to the deep stuff that's way beyond the stuff that we mostly are concerned about every day. So it's because to me, that's where the Course is most powerful to me. It's the fact that it doesn't describe anything like we think it is. And what I found is that when you can hear it and you can accept that perception, then it looks as if that perception then corrects all of the stuff that you think you're going through at a human level. So, in other words, you can't solve a human problem from the perspective of thinking that's what you are. You cannot solve a human problem from the perspective of thinking that's all you are. You cannot solve a human problem from the perspective of thinking that's all you are. And then if you want to bring it down even deeper than that, to bring it home to the body self, you would say, if you were a woman, you would say, I cannot solve a human problem by thinking I'm a woman. I cannot solve a human problem by thinking I am a man. What I can do is rearrange things, still be asleep to who I really am, and just recreate the same thing in another form. And that's what humans do, because they don't realize that they're creating a reality. So what they do is they just rearrange their jail cell. And then they think that they've made a difference, because the Course is teaching us that as long as you think that your happiness comes from anything outside of yourself, you haven't seen the solution yet. So you'll eventually come back around again and make the same choice again. Only it will look like you're dealing with a different situation, but you're not really dealing with a different situation. Because the same decision is the decision that you're being asked to make, which is, am I the creator of my experience, or am I the victim of my experience? Am I the creator of my experience, or am I the victim of my experience? Am I the creator of my experience, or am I the victim of my experience? And he says that the way that we keep ourselves unaware is through holding grievances. He says holding grievances is an attack on God's plan for salvation. It's on page 124. Let me go through that first few paragraphs right quick. On Wednesday, I welcome questions and I welcome discussion. We've already recognized that the ego's plan for salvation is the opposite of God's. We haven't yet emphasized that the ego's plan is an active attack on God's plan and a deliberate attempt to destroy God's plan. In the attack, God has assigned the attributes which are actually associated with the ego, while the ego appears to take on the attributes of God. So whenever you're reading the Course, and you can always substitute fear and love, and it'll make sense. For instance, holding grievances is an attack on love's plan for salvation. We have recognized that fear's plan for salvation is the opposite of love's. We haven't yet emphasized that fear's plan is an active attack on love's plan and a deliberate attempt to destroy the love plan. In the attack, love is assigned the attributes which are actually associated with fear, while the fear appears to take on the attributes of love. The Course says that's what's happened here, that what we say is love is really fear. You know, so, and he says the best way to describe that is the idea of specialness, because he says the person that people say that they love the most is the person they say is the most special, and the people that they feel are the most special are the people that they tend to limit the most, and to be the most possessive of, and to be the most controlling of, and to be the most afraid of losing. So the Course says, we call that love, but that's really fear. And then we assign to love the attributes of fear. So now if someone wants to express themselves, or they really want to be free, or they really want to be themselves, or they really do want to express their own uniqueness and do things their own way, then that's what people say is selfish. And that's what people say is fearful. So we've switched it. We've made fear love and love fear. He says that's what the ego does. The ego just always flips everything. So he says, well, he says, the ego's fundamental wish is to replace God. In fact, the ego is the physical embodiment of that wish, for it is that wish that seems to surround the mind with the body, keeping it separate and alone, and unable to reach other minds except through the body which was made to imprison it. The limit on communication cannot be the best means to expand communication, yet the ego would have you believe that it is. Okay, so the part of the mind that believes in fear and wants to be separate, that part of the mind really wants to replace God, wants to replace the Creator. In other words, doggone it, I want to be in charge. I want to rule everything. He says, now, he says, in fact, the ego is the physical embodiment of that wish, and that wish to replace God, that wish to replace love, that the wish to replace the truth, he says, that seems to surround the mind with the body, keeping it separate and alone and unable to reach other minds. So the Course then says to us that when you wish to be separate, that's what created you being in a body. Like people say, well, why are we in a body? The wish to be in a body is a reflection of our desire to be separate. He says the reason why we are, so it's so simple. The reason why it looks like we're separate is we want to be. That's all they just said. And if I want to be separate, then I have to have a body. Because in order to be separate, you have to have something to be separate with. Well, that's how will we be separate if we didn't have some demarcations, some boundaries, and some limits, right? And he says that keeps the mind separate and alone, which means I'm unable, he says, then you're unable to reach each other's minds except through the body. So now if I want to reach you, I got to somehow use my body to call you. I got to use my body to contact you. I got to use my body to walk over to you. See, now I'm in a body, unable to reach other minds except through the body. That's how we do it, right? Is that not how we communicate? Is that not how we do things? So now it looks like we're in a state that we can only join with each other through the body, through something we do with the body. And he says that's because the body was made to imprison the mind. The body was made to imprison the mind. The body was made to imprison the mind by the fearful part of the mind uses the body to imprison itself. The fearful part of the mind. Now, where's that? I had brought it in here. Like I said, today's class is kind of like at another level. Huh?
Teacher.
They said one picture is worth 1,000 words, so let's see if we can do that.
So basically, we're always joined in mind, but then we just play the game that we're not because we have bodies.
This is what we did. That's the mind. And we're pretending like it's divided up. So in order for me to look like I exist separately, I have to have a body surrounding this part of Earl, and then you got your body. See, and the Course is saying really it's just all mind, it's just all consciousness. We are nothing but a part of consciousness that wanted to see what it was like to be separate. Our desire to be separate had to create something that allowed us to appear to be separate. And what that is called is the body. But now it looks like the body is imprisoning us because it looks like I can't get outside my body. It looks like I'm in my body looking out of my body. So he says the body is a prison house for the mind.
Making a great case for suicide.
Well, that's what physical life is. It is suicide.
Yeah.
It is. Until you wake up to who you really are, physical life is just suicide. It's just a slow way of dying because that's what we believe is going to happen in the end. And so a person is proud that they can slow their process down to 90 years. But it's still suicide. If you think you're going to die, then you are committing suicide. So you don't start living until you realize you're more than a body. You don't start living until you realize you're more than a body. which I used to take when I first started reading the Course, almost like he was putting down the body. But that was just my ego trying to keep his rules going. I didn't say anything about putting down the body. I just said you weren't the body. But since the ego is the part of the man that idolizes the body and everything about the body, anything less than worship of the body makes it feel uneasy. So if you say anything that takes the body off the throne, the ego part of the man gets upset. And the way that you get out of the fear and the separation is to realize that you are not your ego. So let's pretend this is the whole you, right? And the ego is just, you know, I'm magnifying, it ain't even that big. But it's this part of you that thinks it's separate. And this part of you that thinks it's separate has surrounded itself with the body that you look at in the mirror. It's not your whole self. So when you say, so the Course is trying to get us to understand that the ego is not the whole picture. But this part of us wants to rule. Like I said, it wants to replace God. It wants us to think that it's the only part there is. See, my ego wants me to think that this part that's sitting in the chair is the only part of me that exists. And it's the part of me that's in control of everything.
That it's your sum total.
That it's my sum total. Now that I'm in control, and I don't even know what's going on, but I'm in control of it. That's the ego. So when you completely identify with your ego, you cannot come to a class like this. Because if you completely identify with your ego, it is totally meaningless what I'm saying, and it makes no sense at all. So there's a certain level of consciousness when you get to that you have to release your desire for other people to understand you. In other words, there's just some people that are parts of us that just ain't gonna get this. And trying to talk to them to get them to understand it is a sign of your own unconsciousness. Because you won't. And that's because if you understand anything that I'm saying right now at all, then you are awakening. You are an awakening being. That's why I can even at its most abstract level, you kind of get it. There's some people who are still asleep and they're innocent, but they ain't gonna get it. So if we want to have peace, we've got to let go of the attachment to our friends and our relatives and the people we know understanding or agreeing with what it is we're coming to realize. We just have to live it and use it to create peace in our own experience. You're getting to the point that it's not about anybody else anymore. It's not about getting anybody else to understand something anymore. It's just about you demonstrating it in your own life so that you can get the results of the level of consciousness you're on right now.
For me, if I'm in that place and I'm operating from that place, then people are drawn to me that I may not even know that will suddenly start talking about.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. In line at the grocery store.
Absolutely. So if you're really about it, you're never lonely. Whenever I hear people tell me that they're in this but they can't never meet anybody else, I know they're not in it. I know that they think they're in it, but they're not in it. There's no way you can be something that you don't attract. If you don't attract it, you ain't being it. So that's how I can tell where I'm at. What am I attracted right now? Mm-hmm. That's where I'm at. Mm-hmm. I can say I'm this higher consciousness guy, but what kind of people do I attract to me?
So that's your vibration.
That's my real vibration. That's not my fake idealistic vibration that I'm telling myself in my mind. But then again, like he says, the limit on communication cannot be the best means to expand communication. Yet the ego would have you believe that it is. So what would be the limit on communication? The body. Right. So he says, that's the same as saying the body cannot be the best way to expand communication. The body cannot be the best way to expand communication. Now, the Course also says communication means joining. That whenever it says communication, it's not talking about the way we think of communication. It's talking about me telling you about what happened to me yesterday and you understanding what I said happened when I was at the mall. The Course is not calling that communication. Communication is joining. That we're only really communicating when we're joining. So the body is really, so he's saying the body cannot be the best means to join, But to the ego, fearful mind, the body is the best way to join. So if you're in an ego-separated mind, all you want to do is join with bodies. All you want to do is join with bodies. And every kind of way you can think about joining with a body, you want to join. That can be sexually joining with a body. That can be joining with a body for dinner. That can be joining with a body for a high. That can be joining with the body to watch. In other words, the ego wants you to think that the only way you can connect with anything around you is through the use of your body. The last thing our ego wants us to realize is that we could join with each other anytime, any place we wanted to, because our minds are already continuous and our minds are already connected.
So enlightenment is basically just the willingness to be present to that.
Right. Enlightenment is the willingness to be present to what already is.
Right.
That's what
stay present.
Yeah, and stay present with it. Because that's why you get
like
go ahead.
Well, the ego's like knocking. It's constantly knocking like
and it's saying, listen to me. I'm gonna get your attention. Listen to me. And I'm gonna get your attention through pleasure or pain. I'm going to get your attention through pleasure, or I'm going to get your attention through pain, but I'm in the body, and I need you to pay attention to me in the body. I'm the ego, I'm in the body, you've got to pay attention to me, and I'm going to get you to pay attention to me through pleasure or pain.
And focusing on truth is building up this bigger reservoir. I mean, because basically the ego was that little dot.
That's that dot, right. It's the little dot. And so all you're doing is recognizing that the tail is not wagging the dog.
Okay.
It's a great movie.
Yeah. You know what I mean? It's like we're like the tail thinking it's wagging the dog. But if you would be honest with yourself at the level of consciousness of separation, which is where we think we are, all we really do is react to what's already occurred. Something happens, we react. So really, we are just at the tail end of everything, reacting to everything that the present us has created. It's like the real us creates it, and then the separated us has to experience it and perceive it. Because we're already seeing, you know, you wake up to the sunrise, it's already happened. You get into the car, it's already there. You're listening to the course that I'm already saying. You're wearing the clothes you already put on. That's what the course says. We only see the past. We are never seeing anything but the past or the future at the ego level. So that's why the workbook turns around and gives us new interpretations of what we are perceiving. So since I'm a reactionary, he's telling me, "Oh, this is how I want you to look at the stuff that you're seeing that's already happened. What? I want you to say, this doesn't mean anything. You're giving it all the meaning it has to you. You never upset about it for the reason you think. I want you to say you only see in the past. I want you to see." He gives us all these things to say. I place the future in the hands of God. Holding grievances is an attack. Because by the time I hold a grievance, something has already happened. So he said, well, just since you're going to react, then just go holding grievances as an attack on God's plan for salvation. All of a sudden, the workbook made a lot of sense to me when I realized that he was just saying, you all are only perceiving what's already happened and interpreting it, so let me give you some interpretations of what you're seeing that will free you out the prison that you put yourself in. Mm-hmm. So this is like being escaping out of prison is what we're trying to do. We're like a bunch of prisoners who are sneaking over to the side of the yard, plotting our escape, hoping that the warden don't know what we're doing. That's all we're doing. This is the prison break. The Course in Miracles is the prison break.
And we have the key all the time.
All the time. Some people like prison. There's some prisoners don't want to be freed. And literally, they're prisoners who do not want to be freed. They're acclimated to prison life, and they don't want to be freed. Just like what happened with the slaves. The slaves wanted to be free, but on the other hand, when they was first freed, it was like, oh my God,
what do I do now?
How do I eat? So freedom is a great thing to strive for, but it sometimes can seem like imprisonment had its advantages. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's what, we have to be ready for that because we're trying to free ourselves.
I think that's the hardest thing of all is getting happy and free. It's the hardest thing I've ever done.
Right, because your ego knows that if you become truly happy, you cannot stay contained within a body. The Course says that true happiness cannot be contained within the body because it's too great. So the easiest way to transcend the body is through happiness and joy. To be so happy, you can't be contained.
Mm-hmm.
which I think is a totally loving way to be freed. If you think about it, you know what I'm saying? How am I going to be free? You're going to be so happy that you're not going to allow yourself to be limited. You're going to feel so much love that the body ain't even big enough to hold it.
Which is sort of the Christ rising.
That is the Christ rising. Exactly. 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 The rebirth of the idea of who you really are. Mm-hmm. And letting that be resurrect. It's exactly right. Exactly right. And then your ego, so what's that to do with me paying my Visa bill? you know what I'm saying? You know, because the only reason why your Visa bill that you can't pay is there is because you don't know you more than this body, because you don't know that you're a creator, because you don't know you're innocent and you deserve to be happy. You don't need to be struggling, and you shouldn't be having lack because you're a child of God. The fact that you don't know that is why you got the freaking Visa bill you can't pay. And your ego would love you to deal with it as if is paying the Visa bill that's going to make you happy, because that reinforces the idea that you're just this separate little body, separate from God, out here trying to make it on your own.
So that Visa bill is part of the prison that you built. That was something you needed when you ran the bill up to make you happy, and that you can't pay it because you don't have what you need.
Yeah, see that?
Those are the walls of the prison.
That's the walls of the prison. That's you putting some wallpaper up.
You're decorating the prison now.
You're decorating it with Visa.
Rearranging the furniture.
You're just rearranging the furniture. But if you say that to an ego will freak out on you, because the ego is the part of the mind that believes its existence is defined by separation. So that's why when you say that to a person who thinks they're an ego, they'll go, are you out of your mind? Because that's their ego trying to keep its control over the situation. You see what I mean? So this is, like I said, it's some really powerful stuff that we're going to talk about on Saturday.
And it really hit me. It was upsetting, because I realized that my whole life, I had a whole structured life based on that. And I thought I was a free spirit, but it's based on the fact that I'm going to die someday.
Mm-hmm.
Everything from what I did when I was 18, mm-hmm. 20, mm-hmm. to 30, mm-hmm. to retirement.
Everything.
It's all based on the fact that my body's going to die. What a wasted life.
Right, and you could not say that and believe you're an ego.
Really?
Mm-mm. That's what I'm saying. If anybody understands anything that I'm saying in the slightest way, you're waking up. Because if you want
investments.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. I am waking up does not mean I am awake.
Well, and don't you then realize that your investments are okay, because you're using them to facilitate your life here on Earth, but you're not making them your purpose of your life here on Earth, and you're not making them define who you are here on Earth.
And that's exactly what, that's exactly right. That's what gets rid of the whole idea of sacrifice. The idea of sacrifice is the belief that we got to give up what we want in order to get to this next level. And that's what makes people resistant to recognizing that these are all illusions. But the Course is saying, that's why I said, if you really read the Course, it already covers everything you're going to come up with to stop yourself, first of all. And so it says, no, what I'm going to do is I'm going to use everything that you've made to free you.
Mm-hmm.
So if I use everything you've made to free you, where is your fear of loss coming from? And that blows the ego. The ego is always a part of the mind that's looking for where it can lose. So it always tells you that you got to sacrifice. So to really practice what the Course is saying, then you have to give up the body and the pleasures of the body. Or you have to give up the dream to be, you know, the president of a company. It'll just run all that stuff down to you, and that's not what it says. It says, I will use everything that you've made to free you. I'll use your desire to be the president of a company to free you. I'll use your desire to love a certain kind of person to free you. I'll use whatever you come up with to take you back home, to wake you up. And that just blows the ego's mind, because the ego needs to believe in loss in order to survive. That's why every time you let yourself receive something that you would like to receive, you are undoing your ego. Every time you let yourself have a happy moment, you're undoing your ego.
Okay, the ego feeds himself with pain and fear.
There you go.
And everything that's not freeing, loving.
Yeah, exactly. That's his buffet.
So if you want something to free you and to make you happy, not to imprison,
there you go.
Then you're not using.
Then you're undoing your ego.
Okay.
Then you're undoing your ego. Provided that you say to yourself, or get to a level of consciousness, you go, I want this to be used for my awakening.
Mm-hmm.
It was different from, I just want this to be used for my pleasure. Because
when you say you're awakening,
but you're not awake.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't there times that you are awake and then you go back to awakening?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Yeah. Yeah. The reason why I say you're awakening and not awake is that there are still some things of the illusion you still value.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I mean by you're not completely awake. As long as I say there's anything here that's more important than my peace, I'm still not awake yet. You know, like one of the biggest temptations that come up for me right now, you know, a lot of times is the desire for specialness. And then because I'm not in a special relationship. So I'm purposely going for holy relationship, and I'm refusing to go for anything less than that. I just believe it's possible to have relationships that are based on truth that you also have passion in. I don't believe it's a sacrifice one to have the other, you know. And so far, that's the way I've done it. People I've been passionate with, it's been crazy. And then the people that I was staying with, there wasn't no passion. you know, I don't know about you, but I've experienced that before.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
And so what I believe is you can have sanity and passion. And when I say passion, I mean passion about everything. Passion about your life, passion about, you know, getting up in passion. You feel you're excited about what you want your life about. You enjoy the sensuality of your body. You're not angry at your body. You don't feel guilty about your body. But at the same time, you know, you're realizing you're more than your body. So you can have the best of both worlds. You can totally enjoy this beautiful physical dream that we've given ourselves and also wake up to God. So it's no sacrifice anywhere. But you can't do that with a person who is in the old paradigm that believes that love is controlling somebody else and limitation. You can't pull it off with them. So sometimes it looks like you're having to make the choice between, you know, having some kind of one person that really cares about you and having all impersonal relationships. And that's what your ego wants you to believe, that it's one, that you're choosing one or the other. But it's not true at all. It's not true at all. But you can't get to that next level until you understand what your ego is trying to do. And that's why I'm hitting on that. And so we're going to really nail the ego and the Holy Spirit, especially on Saturday, in terms of making sure it won't be able to catch you, do you in, because you won't be able to fool you no more.
Yeah. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. that's all we have to do is recognize it for it to have no power over us. You know, I try to be positive. It's not positive thinking. Even positive thinking is good. But it's about recognizing what's going on. That's what we're trying to do. Yeah, Laura.
Yes. I come from an NLP background, we model.
Yeah.
And I'm having a hard time, and maybe you know, of people who have that kind of relationship.
Mm-hmm. To have what?
The kind of relationship you're talking about.
Do I know?
Yeah, anyone.
Do I know anyone? I know people that are consciously awakening and moving toward that kind of relationship as a goal.
Okay.
Okay, I have that kind of relationship with about five people.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say about six. There's about six people in my life that I don't think with.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I call them. Because if I'm with you and I think a lot, then you couldn't possibly be the right person for me to be close to on an intimate level. But what I mean by think a lot is it okay for me to do this? Is it okay for me to do that? Are you going to perceive it the wrong way if I do this? Is it okay? You know what I'm saying? It's like you're always questioning before you do anything around them that can't possibly be the people that you all are recognizing each other truly for who you really are, because there is nobody else to do anything with. Yeah. So as long as you can say there is somebody else to do something with, you know you're asleep.
But I think I'm noticing the same thing you talked about, Laura, that you know, when you watch movies or when you talk to people or you see the way that most relationships operate, it's in that give and take, and I'm only going to do this if you do that, and you have to be here forever, and we don't have those models.
That's right.
That's right.
That's why we're the pioneers.
Sometimes it feels like you're kind of, you expand a little and you bump into something and you think, well, hold on, here we go.
Mm-hmm. That's, you know, the easiest way to have that kind of relationship that I found is with somebody who wants to have one of those kind of relationships.
Yeah.
I used to always pick the people who didn't want to have one.
Right.
You know,
because you were going to show them how to do it.
Because I was going to show them how to do it, and you know what I'm saying? It's like, now since I find that in my relationships, I tend to listen to who has the same purpose that I have, and then want to join with them. And I find I don't go through nearly any of the stuff I used to go through in my other relationships. And I realized that the Course says the ego's, there are two laws. The ego's law is seek and do not find.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Then it says that the Holy Spirit's law is seek and you find. Well, you will find. Okay. Then he describes how you become a seeker that finds, which is a seeker that recognizes they already have, and then they get the blocks out of the way to recognizing that. And then the seeker who never finds, he says, is the seeker that's always looking for something that's opposite to what it wants or what it is. So it always wants just the opposite. It goes after your ego, always attracts, try to point your attention to what you can't have. You know, you'll be turned on by the person who's not turned on by you, or you want the job that you can't get, or, you know, everything is like, I want it but I can't have it. I want it, but he said that's the ego's law, because it's through the perception of us being in lack that he says we keep the ego going. It's through our awareness of our abundance that we know there is no ego. So every time, I'll say it again, every time you let yourself receive something abundantly that you love, you're undoing your ego. Every time somebody hugs you and you hug them back and you really feel good about that and you don't have any guilt in that and you're enjoying that and you're saying, I deserve this, you just undone your fear. You just undone some of your ego, because your ego is the part of you that'll be hugging saying, is this too tight? Is this too close? Should I be hugging? Should I not be hugging? You know, ooh. You know what I'm saying? It's like your ego never lets you have any experience in the moment completely. It always makes you judge whatever is going on so that you're not actually there.
And it's just that little dot?
It's smaller than that. Hey, it is magnified. This is magnified a quadrillion times. Yeah. And so he says what the ego does is that it projects this world out here. And then we think that's the world we live in.
But does it, like your ego, when you're born?
Yeah.
You're born with an ego?
Your ego is what's born.
Right.
Yeah. Well, what happens is that the course says we act like we were born without an identity, and then we have to make up one as we go along.
So you make it up as you go.
That's what they call growing up. Yeah, growing up is I made up my ego.
Oh my God.
And he says then by the time that you can make all of the delineations and interpretations that society wants you to make on your own without society's help, he says, then you're an adult.
It's like the respect you have to give to an older person because just his older is the ego.
Yeah, there is no older person.
Yeah, exactly.
But if you could actually reduce it down to anywhere I see separation, I see the ego. You would never have to figure out when you were dealing with. Like even, it's like right now it's important for us to realize we're listening to this, but our ego is listening to this to a certain degree too. And so our ego is going to take everything it heard today and it's going to try to contrive ways to screw us with it. I'm telling you now,
yeah.
Take 28 years of working with this. I'm telling you, I can say it's a time. So it's sitting up there just as much as you're sitting up there. Okay, it's like, okay, now he just heard this today. So what can I do to make him think he's a body that's separate? How can I take the truth that he just heard and cause him some pain with it? Go out and do something real stupid with it. You know what I'm saying? It's like that part of the man. So the Course says the way that you can always keep your ego from fooling you is by how you feel. So now all I do is I just go, how do I feel about that? Because your ego can use the truth reasoning. You know, like it can say stuff like, well, if you were really spiritual like you were, right now you just wouldn't be holding that grievance. Because you know, you right now, you should be more advanced than you are right now. You know, whatever. Your ego, in the end, if you feel like crap, or you feel less than peaceful, he says, that was your ego that just interpreted that thing. But if you feel bad, that was your ego that just interpreted that thing. If you feel worried and concerned, so you can't, he says, you can't see nothing correctly and be afraid.
Okay, but. So help me out with the difference between holding grievances and being attentive and reporting. I spent two nights watching this frontline thing on Bush's war.
Mm-hmm.
And then last night after that...
How you feel?
Amy Goodman did this thing, The Body of War, about this one guy who he's paralyzed from the nipples down. And it was hard for me.
I made women like that too.
Huh?
Nothing. I'm sorry.
Anyway,
that was the ego. That was my ego.
So You wouldn't have to hold grievances against those women.
Right.
But holding grievances against Bush and Cheney and all these.
Okay, but that's the purpose of it. See, the purpose of the special from the perspective of the ego was to make you feel like you were separate from Bush and Cheney, and therefore reinforce your own belief in your own ego. So the purpose of the whole report was to make you feel separate. That's the true meaning of the support. Because if you recognize the truth, you would know that nobody was dying in any war anywhere, and that everybody, no matter what they were going through, they were creating it, and in the end they couldn't be destroyed, and there's nothing but love that's real.
So I don't have to send anything to Salvation Army. I don't have to send a check.
Unless it makes you feel more peace. If you feel directed by the Holy Spirit to write a check, then you write a check. Because sometimes you'd be told to write a check. See, that's what I'm saying. The key thing is always to try to look at it from the bigger picture, which is there's just two games going on. There's me that is one, and my ego that's trying to convince me that there's separation. And everything in the world is either being used to make me believe I'm separate or to make me believe I'm joined. Period. That's the big game. Now, the way we work that out is by becoming bodies, having wars, and upsets, and disagreements, and strikes. Because that keeps us so focused on the illusion that we forget that we're the one that's creating it. So the way to get beyond war is to recognize that the war is ultimately a defense against the truth. It's to know that the reason why it's there is to make you forget the truth. And you know it did, because all of a sudden there was a Bush to be mad at, and all these other things. So then you become totally immersed in your human separated consciousness. And that's the real purpose of the war. The real purpose of the war is to make us think we're separate and to keep us thinking we're separate, to make the illusion real.
So when are there consequences then?
The consequences...
We have all these ways in the Constitution hold people responsible for the choices they make. I mean, I can look at... You know, I've been a high school principal. I looked at people right in the eye and said, I know at that moment you lost it, and this is the rule.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't mean I don't like you,
mm-hmm.
but your behavior is not cool in this high school.
Mm-hmm.
So,
but remember that.
And I won't be here for 3 days.
But check this out. Remember, what we're being asked to do is to jump up another level and to look at whatever is going on from a human perspective, from the perspective of being beyond a human. Okay, so at the human level, let's vote for somebody who won't want war. Okay, in other words, as you look at, you play it this way. If I am an ego, and if I'm only an ego, how could I be the most loving ego possible? Well, I'd be an ego who would vote against the war. I'd be an ego that sent some money to the starving people. Okay, so in other words, at the level of the ego, you go ahead and you do whatever your heart tells you to do. Get a guy standing out in front of the store, if that's what you are led to do. All right? But then the course is saying, now, you know, let's move it up. Let's look at it from the big picture. The big picture is, there's a plan on your part to prove that you're separate because you wanted to experience separation. The way that you did that was to surround yourself with a body that makes you think you're separate from yourself. So now you're sitting in a room full of all of yourselves, all pretending that you're not one. And you even broke it down to race, sex, color, social and ethnic groups, economic differences. So your age, it's like this is the separation game. And the way you play the separation game is you have to stay afraid. Because whenever you feel afraid, you separate. We all know that if I'm afraid of you, I'm not going to come up and want to be around you. So there has to be a certain amount of fear in order for us to maintain our separation. There's got to be a certain amount of fear in order for us to maintain our separation. Got that? But the Course says the ego has to do a balancing act. And this is the way the balancing act works. I got to give you just enough fear. It's got to be just enough fear between me and you to keep us separate, but not so much fear between us that we try to get rid of it. So the ego is always just trying to keep you just a little upset, but not upset to do enough about it. I'm unhappy, but not enough to do anything about it. I wish I was out of this relationship, but not enough to do it. It balances it.
Mm-hmm.
You see what I'm saying? So whenever there is talks of war, rumors of war, racial injustice, criticism, catastrophes, those all produce fear. And so it pulls us into a separated state with each other. when you begin to wake up, you realize that the only enemy is fear and guilt, because it's fear and guilt that keeps the separation going. So when you wake up, you realize that the only thing you should be doing is every single part of the day, all day long, letting go of guilt, letting go of fear, remembering that you're innocent. That if you were to let go of guilt, let go of fear, remember that you're innocent, then all those painful things that are happening, that are being caused by this belief in separation, would have to fade away, because you're no longer investing in separation anymore. And guess what would happen to your human self? It would be a miraculous healing of the war. The Berlin Wall would just seem to fall. All of a sudden, a civil rights bill was passed that allowed, you see, they got rid of the gym. We, at our level, we see it as something on the outside went through some kind of a physical change. But the truth is, you are experiencing the result of your no longer being focused on separation and guilt. And that's what would happen in your life. Your not being focused on separation and guilt would work its way out in terms of effects in your life that you would perceive as your physical life getting better. But your ego would say, well, your physical life got better because you went to college. It wouldn't tell you that your physical life got better because you were focused on the truth and realizing you were innocent, so therefore getting rid of the thoughts that create pain. And that's why the level that we're working on is a level that's so much more powerful than the human level, because we're working at the causative level. We're working at the level of what causes the stuff in the first place. Where if you're at the effect level, you always think the thing is creating you. So you got to go out there and fight it, because it's creating you. So war and politics and religion are great ways to keep the separation going. They're like the ego's emergency tools. It's like when all else fails, let's talk politics. When all else fails, let's talk religion. Because we know somebody's going to get mad.
So the people that are involved in the war are the ones that want to keep separate.
The ones who are actually in the war?
They're involving that separation.
The people who are in the war are doing the courts are doing just an exaggerated version of what we're all doing. That's just a more obvious example of what all of our egos are doing, because he says there's one ego and all of us have it.
So somebody that's hiding in their basement and is afraid of all people is like experiencing the same thing that the soldier that's shooting at someone, that separation. That's their way to express it.
Exactly. And when you wake up, you stop getting fooled by the form. That's why I question it, because it just brings up so many things. Because the Course always has something in the book that refers to anything that somebody brings up, and it blows my mind. Like the whole thing about attack. He says that most people don't realize that the thought of attacking someone and the thought of being attacked by someone, both of those thoughts are attack thoughts. They're the same thing. So that explains why seems like good things happen to bad things happen to good people. Because if I'm a good person walking around afraid of being attacked all the time, then I'm giving energy to the thought of attack. As much as a person who's walking around going, I'm going to attack somebody today because I need some money. But the people who see themselves as victim see themselves as innocent and see themselves as having nothing to do with the perpetrator showing up. Because they don't realize that the thought of being attacked is a thought of being attacked.
So like circulation is one of those laws that affects everything. It affects your abundance, it affects attack giving or attack taking, because it's a form of circulation.
All of it, yeah. All of it is a circulation. So what I'm saying is that you and I have what you call activist egos, and we want to see social change. So, like you were saying, like the injustices. Okay, so it's more of a challenge. So it can be more of a challenge of a person who sees themselves as part of a minority to not see themselves as a victim, and not be more into that separation attitude, because it looks like I'm being done in by the majority. Okay, so our ego knows that the quickest way to make us feel separate is for us to zero in on our race. And then zero in on how we think our race could be treated and has been treated. That becomes our immediate ego defense for our separation. And so it took me a while to get that that was what was going on a lot of times. And so now I could not handle my ethnicity until I got beyond it and looked back at it and then went, okay, how can my African American heritage be used as a means for me to wake up instead of a means for me to go to sleep? Well, then what did the Holy Spirit do? It plopped me into, years ago, into majority white situations. 90% of my students have always been in white bodies for 20 years, even in the Deep South, which was unheard of with this stuff. And I've heard more than once, as people were awakening and they felt safe, they would come to me and say, you know, because of my relationship with you, it made an incredible difference in my perception of black men and black people. They can be honest enough to say that in terms of what, you know, when they weren't busy pretending that most people who are on the truth path pretend they don't have any racism. But that's what everybody do on the truth path. They pretty much pretend that they're not what their egos are. You know, they don't realize that that's why you're trying so hard to get it. It's because you know at some level you know your ego. You got the biggest ego of all. That's why you're trying so hard to wake up. You know, so it's like, but your ego, the Course says, but your ego has what it calls a face of innocence. So what it does is it always sees itself as being this innocent, beautiful, wonderful person in this wicked, 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 wicked world. You know, and he runs the whole thing down. It's like, bam, boom. You know, it's like going to leave and nowhere to hide. You know what I'm saying? So I found that when I would, you know, I don't have a racist bone in my body, but I was born in the South during the time of segregation. Right.
Right.
If consciousness creates my reality, why would I be born in that area of the country and under those conditions, unless that was exactly the way my own consciousness was, or I couldn't be there. I couldn't be a non-racial person in a totally racist environment. But I would see myself as being outside of it because my face of innocence said I didn't believe in racism. But that's what your face of innocence has to say. You know, but then underneath my face of innocence was the victim. You know what I'm saying? And so that's why it looked like I was being victimized as a black person.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So for me, unless I can bring the truth down to these kind of levels that I'm talking right now, to me it's just abstract stuff that people just talking. So let's bring it down. You know what I'm saying? Let's bring it down to the present political situation. Let's bring it down to the present sexual, racial. How does it all work in terms of this? And the Course says it's very easy. It's all a defense against the truth. It's just a trick to make you think you are separate from God. It is just a trick to make you think you're not this unlimited being that you're reading about in this book. It's all contrived to occupy your attention so much that you never become aware of your true identity. And then the mind says, well, how do I get past this? You appreciate and fully enjoy what you have right now. What? You transcend the fear through appreciation. And so you love and appreciate what you love and appreciate. And you give away what you no longer want and you no longer appreciate. That's the plan. What? There's no sacrifice in that. I know. That's how you get rid of the ego, through no sacrifice. So if you ever walk away from a Course class, or you ever walk away from a truth book, and you say, and your mind is telling you anything like you have to give up something that you really want because of something you heard me say, or the Course says, that's your way of knowing your ego is interpreting what happened in that class, because there's nothing that in that class had anything to do with you giving up something that you really wanted. It had anything to do with you not enjoying your life as it is right now with what you have in it right now. Now, if you come up with this saying that, then you did not hear that correctly. And you'll get to that point that you'll do that. You'll go, okay, I can tell by the way I'm feeling right now. I'm setting myself a pack of lies. So I can either keep on analyzing this for the rest of the day, which is one option, or I can just go ahead and feel it, and everything's okay. There's nothing wrong with me feeling what I feel. But I know from the very beginning it couldn't possibly be coming from God, because if it was coming from God, it would make me feel more peaceful. So I know this interpretation must be coming from my ego, because I'm not feeling good. I don't care how justified I feel. I don't care how much I can quote what the Course said. If you don't feel more peace, it ain't God talking to you, is what the Course teaches. And that's too simple. So it blows the ego up, and the ego goes crazy behind something like that, because you can't fool a person when they believe something like that. You can, in other words, you can tell yourself anything you want to tell yourself today, and I can too. Mm-hmm. All right? I don't care what it is. But if at the end result you don't feel more peace and more clarity, it was your ego that was interpreting to you, not God. If God is interpreting to you, it's like when my mother passed and we were very, very close, when God talked to me about her transition, I felt more peaceful. When the ego talked to me about it, I felt more pain. That's all you got to go. Wow. How, is this relationship real or not real? Well, as a result of this relationship, do you feel more peace? Or as a result of your perception of this relationship, are you feeling more conflict? It's just that simple. You know.
So on the way to that higher level, there's that spot where you can look at the you spoke one time that you can have a relationship with someone,
mm-hmm.
know they're innocent,
mm-hmm.
and then say to them, you know, if you keep talking to me the way you do, you have a right to do that because you're innocent, you're
right.
God. But you keep talking to me the way you do, I'm just not going to be here anymore.
Right. That's so loving.
So we could get to that level with this. I can say, you know, you guys... Cheney Bush.
Right. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
You choose the way you choose.
I hear you.
You know?
Uh-huh.
I'm going to look the other way. I'm not going to be here. And I may actively get involved for a candidate who sees it a different way.
Right.
Although I know that maybe, boy, this is it. Okay. Although I know that what you're doing is probably a part of me that I can't stand.
Boom. Bingo. As long as you don't separate yourself from what you see, then you will always heal.
Because I have attacked. I just haven't attacked that way.
That's cool. There you go. You didn't drive a tank through Iraq, but you had attack thoughts.
Yeah.
You know, whether it was in traffic yesterday, being mad at the person that cut in front of you. That's an attack thought.
And I have a right to make another choice right now.
There you go. There you go.
Okay.
Yeah.
If I see war, I'm at war with myself.
That's right. If you see conflict, then you, all that means is I got some conflict in my mind that I need to heal. I got some conflict in my mind. Yeah. I'm telling you, if we walk out of here today, and just remember any part of what we talked about today, the blow to your fear and pain will be tremendous. You know, and the thing about it is that when you heal your mind, sometimes you don't realize how much you've been blessed. Because nothing happens. You don't realize that the fact that nothing is happening actually means it's working. You know, what could have happened today that didn't happen today? You know what I'm saying? We don't know how many things that could have come to us today that hurt us, that's not going to happen because of what we said today, but we don't know that.
They dissolve. Okay, mm-hmm. They came. I've been saying to myself, and I should tell my kids, I feel like in a platform right now. Like I'm in standby.
Mm-hmm.
Like nothing's happening, but I'm still
right. That's where you feel like you are right now.
Completely.
Uh-huh.
For a couple of weeks, I say that's where I am.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way I feel.
Mm-hmm.
And like yesterday, one of my teachers, like you're in a platform, like you're going climbing the mountain, that you have to stop to start to think everything.
Thank you.
That's the way I feel.
Yeah, and that's okay.
Okay.
What I've realized is that every stage you go through is a stage.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? Whether it looks like you're just sitting still right now, that's a stage that you go, and that's okay. But you know what? If you're focusing on the truth the way you're focusing on the truth, I would suggest that if you're doing anything but sitting still, that you're probably moving faster right now than you've ever moved in your life, and it's your ego that's standing still. It's your ego that's immobilized and don't know what to do. You know what I'm saying? Because you aren't your ego. And so that's what you begin to realize is that he says what makes the ego miserable makes spirit happy.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, and what makes spirit happy makes the ego miserable. It's like when you recognize that you're not the separate being, the part of you that wants to feel separate gets depressed. That's why when people walk out of the class sometimes, they feel weary and disoriented. It's not them that feels weary and disoriented. Their ego feels weary and disoriented because it lost a little bit of its control today and it doesn't know what to do about it. So when you leave, it's busy trying to build itself back up by trying to make you think about, analyze, weary, so it can get solidified again. So you can become that solid ego being again. And so that's why I suggest to people a lot of times with these concepts, just be with them. Rather than trying to analyze them, just be with them, you know, and that way you have a more powerful experience of them than to analyze them. You just, in other words, just be with the idea today that, you know, okay, my idea, my thought of being separate, that's what's ultimately behind any kind of pain that I'm going through right now. Let me just be with that. That anything I think I'm upset about right now, that's really ultimately coming from my belief that I'm separate. And the reason why I think I'm separate is because of my ego. You know, and I'm not really my ego. And so, how do I get past this? Well, I need to do something I would really enjoy as quickly as possible, even if it was going to have a milkshake. Because I need to let myself have some kind of a fulfilling experience, because anytime I let myself have a fulfilling experience, that is an undoing of the ego.
Mm-hmm. I feel like my ego just takes all these names like presidents and mothers and ex-girlfriends, throws them in a hat, and then picks one out.
Yeah, you
can just deal with that one.
How it feels.
You know, brother?
Okay. So it's like, which one would? What would I use today to try to make you think you're separate? Oh, I think I used my child today. Oh, I used him yesterday. I think I used my job
mother's
today.
A big one.
You know, mother's a big one.
President.
Thank you. So, I want you all to know that I so thoroughly, thoroughly enjoy teaching this class and sharing this class with you. Your level of openness and willingness to listen to these concepts at the level that you listen to them is what makes all of this worthwhile for me that I do. Because so often I hunger to communicate at the level that we're communicating on. And I just and I know from teaching so long that I can't do it yet with everybody. And but you all are so awake and really waking up. And I just want you to know that. Don't let your ego tell you for a second that you have ordinary minds. Because you don't. And you do.
You don't and you do.
Because the ordinary mind is innocent and powerful and loving. And that's the way the mind ordinarily is.
Naturally.
And he says, we just taught ourselves to be unnatural. And that's why we're under such strain. And he said, you wonder where your strain comes from? If your strain is coming from the way you think, the way you've been taught to think is unnatural. Everything you all do is unnatural thinking. He says you can always tell unnatural thinking because it's attended by guilt. So if you're feeling guilty, your thinking is unnatural. It is not the correct way to think. You know, because guilt is a request for punishment. So when you feel guilty, you're just asking the universe to punish you. And nobody should believe that that would be a natural thing to do, would be to ask for punishment all day long. He says, but that's what you do every time you feel guilty. You're saying, punish me so I can be okay again. Punish me so I can be okay again. And so people feel guilty, then they have calamities and tragedies and accidents and illness, and they don't know where it's coming from, because our society teaches us that unless you feel guilty, you are some kind of a sociopath. Something is wrong with you if you don't feel guilty. Because they said, no, it's not about feeling guilty, it's about being aware when you're making a mistake and being aware of the consequences of that mistake. That's what you want. You want to know that this is a mistake. It won't get you what you want to attack somebody. It won't get you what you want to deceive. It won't get you what you want. He says, that's what you want to think. He says, if you look at it as a mistake, Jesus is so smart. He says, if you look at it like it's a mistake, he says, your mind will automatically will stop doing it or correcting it, because all your life you've been programmed not to make mistakes, if at all possible. But when you say it's bad, or when you say, I feel guilty because I went out on my mate last night, so I feel guilty. You're saying, I went out on my mate last night, please punish me so that I can be okay again. Okay, I'll tell you the punishment. Well, why don't I just give you some kind of an STD, and then you can feel even guiltier. Or if you have one, why don't you feel guilty about it, instead of really realizing that that's just your call for love, and you're still innocent, and it has nothing to do with who you are, if you do. Because that undo your ego. You know what I'm saying? It's like when the Holy Spirit tells you something, you're going to feel better. You're going to go, phew, you're going to feel better.
Because the guilt doesn't fix the mistake. It just keeps you chasing it.
It perpetuates it.
But the forgiveness releases it and realigns your thinking so that you don't keep chasing that mistake.
There you go.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. So that's why he says forgiveness is correct perception. It's forgiveness is not, I'm overlooking what you did to me. He says forgiveness is simply saying, I'm finally seeing this correctly. That's why when I say I forgive you, when you say I forgive you, mother, all you say to your mother is, I finally see you correctly. You either love or a big old call for love. That's I forgive you. I forgive you is not you molested me when I was a child and now I'm overlooking the molestation that you did to me. It's not forgiveness. Forgiveness is not overlooking something that you think was actually done to you. The court says you cannot overlook something that you think was done to you, and it is insane to try. And I went, wow, that makes sense. That's why you think forgiveness is so hard. Because you really feel this was done to you, and you think you're trying to pretend that it wasn't done to you. Says you can't do that. What you have to do is correctly perceive what the whole thing was in the first place. Where it came from, why it was there, how it didn't work, who you are beyond it. That's how you let it go. You see? So real forgiveness is nothing like what the world teaches. It's not asking you to overlook something horrible that you think somebody did to you.
Okay, did you see the program on Monday from Eckhart Tolle?
Not yet, because I'm out of time.
One of the things she said that really made me, before you can awaken to a conscious, you have to suffer. Like he said, he said, he tried to commit suicide.
That's his perception. You have to always realize that. Yeah, that's what you have to always realize when you're listening to anybody.
Okay.
You know, never let go of the fact that that's still another being that's equal to you sharing something. And so you still got the right to go, you know, Eckhart, 99% of what just came out of your mouth sure did resonate with me, and I love that, and I'm going to use that. But I don't agree that you have to suffer in order to recognize the truth.
Right.
Because if you set it up that way in your mind, you will suffer in order to recognize. But, okay, here's the other part of that, though, which is part B. 99.9% of all people don't